come back if they went through. Down by the change of ignorance, victimized by circumstances, found guilty, law and justice blind. The history of magical love, he wants man. So everywhere I look, I find.
Good evening. You're listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. This is Kingston's campus and community radio station. It's now 7 o'clock on July 26, 2017. We are broadcasting live from the basement of Carruthers Hall at Queen's University in Kingston, Ontario, as well as online at cfrc.ca, on Cogeco Cable 282, and streaming through your Android and iPhone apps. This is CFRC Prison Radio. We broadcast every Wednesday here at 7 o'clock till 8 o'clock. We focus on a variety of prison issues and prisoner perspectives. Our signal reaches Collins Bay Institution, Millhaven Institution, Bath Institution, Joyceville, and Cape Vincent in upstate New York. And thank you to the people who recently confirmed that you can hear us from Millhaven and Bath. We weren't sure about that since the cable channel got switched over to Bell. So hello. Tonight's show is Calls from Home, which we do every last Wednesday of the month, where we feature messages, letters, song requests, tips, poetry, whatever you send us. So if you want to get in touch with us for a future show, you can call our number at 613-329-2693. That is 613-329-2693. We have a voicemail set up there. We can also receive calls from inside. If you're calling from inside, the person to give the name of is Alex Jackson, and the address is 62 Fifth Field Company Lane, Kingston, Ontario, K7L3N6. If you want to get in touch with us by email, we are at cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net. We have an archive online at cfrcprisonradio.wordpress.com. There's a Facebook group called Calls from Home. And, of course, we do snail mail, and it's our favorite way. You can send us a letter at CFRC Prison Radio, care of CFRC, Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, Kilo 7 Lima, 3 November 6. That's K7L3N6. If you want to call us tonight while we're playing some music or any of our segments, you can call us live at 613-533-2372. You can request a song, give us some feedback, yell at us, whatever you want to do. So we have a couple of announcements for this week. The first is a press release that we put out, I think just a few days ago, announcing our annual Prisoners Justice Day broadcast, which is coming up this August 10th, 2017. Every August 10th is Prisoners Justice Day. So this is the release. On Thursday, August 10th, CFRC 101.9 FM presents its ninth annual broadcast for Prisoners Justice Day, remembering all those who have died behind bars. And for the first time, this is exciting, this broadcast will be shared by CJAI 92.1 FM, which is Amherst Island Radio, which is a very cool station. If you're anywhere near Amherst Island, you should be able to hear it. That's 92.1. 2017 marks the 43rd annual Prisoners Justice Day, which began in commemoration of Eddie Nallen, a prisoner who bled to death in the segregation unit of Millhaven Prison on August 10, 1974. More than four decades later, upwards of 200 prisoners die in custody every year in Canada alone. From 5 to 8 p.m. on August 10, 2017, CFRC 101.9 FM will air interviews, news, features, and memorials about prisoners and prison conditions. And then from 8 to 10 p.m., you can tune in for messages and music requests by and for prisoners and their loved ones and supporters. The broadcast will be simulcast on CJAI 92.1 FM and streamed online at cfrc.ca. So if you're listening to this and you want to submit a request or share some thoughts or give us some feedback for the Prisoners Justice Day broadcast on August 10th, you still have time to do so. Contact us at one of the either by email or phone or by letter, and we'll give you the address and number again later in the show. But yeah, we really encourage you to do that. Also, in our announcements, we have sort of a local public safety, public service announcement. There's been a flood warning issued for multiple lakes in the Cataraqui region. This is put out by the Cataraqui Region Conservation Authority. They've issued a flood warning for the following lakes as of yesterday: Buck Lake, Devil Lake, Lower Beverly Lake, Upper Beverly Lake, Canoe Lake, Kingsford, Desert Lake, Singleton Lake, Charleston Lake, Lobro Lake, and Sydenham Lake. Charleston Lake itself may see levels higher than those experienced in May. Connected lakes and watercourses associated with the above list may also be affected. Yesterday, the CRCA gauge stations recorded as much as 159 millimeters of precipitation in Brockville and a range of 90 to 160 millimeters across the jurisdiction that extends between Brockville and Napanee. Water managers continue to conduct operations to minimize the effects and pass flows down through the system. And the flood watch for Buell's, Butler's Creek, and the detention basin in Brockville remains in effect until tomorrow, Thursday. The CRCA has extended the flood warning for Lake Ontario and the St. Lawrence River, as well as water levels remain at record highs. Shoreline flooding and erosion from high waves is still possible during storms and periods of strong winds. The water level measured today at Kingston, and this was issued yesterday, is at 75.6 meters, which is half a meter less than Lake Ontario's 100-year flood high at 76 meters. The CRCA is urging residents to take care along the shoreline and on the water as levels decline. Unsafe or unstable banks may exist because of recent erosion, high water, and wave action. Has deposited debris along shorelines and beaches, and floating debris could cause hazardous conditions for boaters. So that is your public service, public safety announcement, whatever it is, for the week. And let's move on to some news. So we've been following the story of a person who died at the Central East Correctional Center in Lindsay, Ontario, Suleiman Fakiri. A coroner's report was released this week that revealed further details on his death in custody, which was in Lindsay, Ontario, on December 15th, 2016. Fakiri struggled with mental illness and was jailed on charges of making threats. There were more than 50 signs of injury, according to the coroner's report, from blunt impact trauma as Fakiri was restrained and had a spit hood placed over his head, put in leg irons after allegedly becoming agitated. The coroner did not determine whether the cause of death was from a heart condition, from the blunt force trauma, emotional agitation, or possible asphyxia from the spit hood, but noted that those are all factors. His family continues to press for an inquiry and charges against the guards involved. Correctional Service of Canada has announced that it is closing its Regina training facility for its guards, which it shared with the RCMP, and is moving it to Kingston next year, which is less than 2 years after it spent more than $9 million to retrofit the facility, so-called world-class facility in Regina. And they did not say why they're moving it, although I think the speculation is that the RCMP is expanding its training. Correctional Service of Canada has also approved the first transfer of a transgender prisoner to a federal institution based on gender identity rather than physical anatomy. Fallon Abbey told CBC her request to be moved to a women's prison in BC has been approved after years of campaigning, and she expects to be transferred this week. Yesterday, I believe, she was supposed to be transferred. An update from the Muskrat Falls resistance in Labrador. Three Inuit elders were incarcerated this week at Her Majesty's Penitentiary in St. John's, Newfoundland, after refusing to agree to a condition to stay away from the controversial Muskrat Falls dam site in Labrador. Elders and land protectors Jim Learning, Eldred Davis, and Marjorie Flowers refused to sign an undertaking to stay away from the site and were taken into custody last Friday. Last month, Beatrice Hunter also spent 10 days at the penitentiary after refusing the same condition. And to be clear, this is a men's prison that is, they're opening a special unit for these, for the women elders among the arrestees here. In May, the entire community of Mud Lake, downstream of Muskrat Falls, had to be evacuated due to high water levels that have been associated with the project. Opponents of the Muskrat Falls Dam say their lives, land, homes, and sovereignty are directly threatened by the project and that they will not obey the court injunction. This is also a week called to show solidarity with the so-called J20 defendants, which are arrestees who were kettled at anti-Trump protests on January 20th during the inauguration in Washington, D.C. More than 200 people were kettled, mass arrested, and charged with a variety of serious felonies, and many experienced abuse at the hands of the D.C. police for their participation in the protests. For more information on this, we did a show about it 2 weeks ago. You can see our archive, or you can visit CrimeThink, that's CrimeThinc.com, or defendj20resistance.org for the most up-to-date information on what's going on with that. And I think we'll play a song written about this some point tonight. In Tennessee, prisoners at White County Jail in Sparta, Tennessee, are being offered a reduced sentence if they agree, get this, to undergo a sterilization procedure in a move authorized by a local judge and condemned by the American Civil Liberties Union. Georgia State University law professor Paul Lombardo told Splinter News that it was actually the U.S. model of sterilization of those deemed criminal and mentally ill in California throughout the 20th century that actually inspired Adolf Hitler to adopt the program in Nazi Germany. In Portland, Oregon, on July 4th, which is so-called Independence Day in the United States, a noise demonstration was held at a juvenile detention center with a banner reading, "Free the kids, F the law," with sound-responsive LED lights, fireworks, and music. Demonstrators scaled the walls of the juvenile detention center and hung the banner from the building. They write, "This was a small gesture of solidarity with the folks locked up on this celebratory night of quote-unquote freedom. The 4th of July is an empty holiday, and freedom means nothing whether there are still people kept in cages." In St. Louis, Missouri, on July 21st, there was a noise demonstration held at the so-called Workhouse Jail, right in St. Louis, notorious for its filth, pest infestations, mold, and infamous gladiator tournaments set up between prisoners orchestrated by guards. That's what it's notorious for, but this demonstration was called in response to a heat wave where temperatures reached 108 degrees Fahrenheit, which is 42 Celsius. 300-plus people gathered to demand immediate relief for those inside, and things got a little rowdy, and some even breached the outer fence of the medium-security institution and approached a second fence to communicate directly with prisoners inside before being pushed back and pepper-sprayed by police in riot gear. City Hall has responded by promising to immediately install air conditioners inside the jail. Some say it's not about the heat wave, it's about incarceration. Others are waiting and seeing whether that actually pans out. So that's the news for tonight. And I think we should probably play some music. So we have a request that came in through our email account. So this is a special request. Shouting out to Graham J. at Pittsburgh Institution. Apparently Graham is a Steelers fan. So we are going to play Black and Yellow by Wiz Khalifa. And the message to Graham is, quote, "We love and miss you, Graham and slash Daddy, and we'll see you soon. Love, Maureen and Nika." So this is for you, Graham, at Pittsburgh Institution, Black and Yellow by Wiz Khalifa. Enjoy.
Yellow. Yeah, stripe, yellow paint. Them niggas scared of it, but them hoes ain't. Soon as I hit the club, look at them hoes' face. Hit the pedal once, make the floor shake. Sway inside, my engine roaring. It's the big boy, you know what I paid for it. And I got the pedal to the metal. Got you niggas checking game, I'm balling out on every level. Hear them haters talk, but there's nothing you could tell them. Just made a million, got another million on my schedule. No love for them, nigga breaking hearts. No keys, push to start. Yeah,
You know what it is. Everything I do, I do it big. Yeah, screaming that's nuts. When I pulled off the lot, that's nuts. Reppin' my town, when you see me, you know everything.
Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow.
I put it down from the whip to my diamonds, I'm in.
Black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow, black and yellow.
Got a call from my jeweler, this just in. And bitches love me cause I'm fucking with their best friends. Not a lesbian, but she a freak though. This ain't for one night, I'm shining all week, ho. I'm sipping Clico and rocking yellow diamonds. So many rocks up in my watch, I can't tell what the time is. Got a pocket full of big faces. Throw it up cause every nigga that I'm with, Taylor.
Yeah, you know what it is. Everything I do, I do it big.
That crowd underneath them clouds can't get close to you. And my car look unapproachable. Super clean, but it's super mean. She wanna fuck with them cats. Smoke weed, count stacks, get fly, take trips, and that's that. Real rap, I let her get high as she want and she feel that. Convertible drop feel, 87 the top pill. Back,
You know what it is.
Man, if you don't, you should by now. Taylor Gang.
You know what it is. Everything I do, I do it big. Yeah, screaming that's nuts. When I pulled off the lot, that's nuts. Reppin' my town, when you see me, you know everything.
Black and yellow, black and yellow.
The sergeant put me in a cell, then he went home for the night. I said, come back here, you so-and-so. I ain't being treated right, well, they're bound to get you.
August 10th marks the 43rd International Prisoners' Justice Day since 1975. A day of remembrance for all those who died behind bars and a day of solidarity for all those who still struggle inside. Join CFRC 101.9 FM starting at 5 p.m. for interviews, discussions, memorials, and after 8 p.m., requests and music from prisoners and their loved ones. Write to us at CFRC Prison Radio at riseup.net, by mail at calls from home, CFRC 101.9 FM, Queen's University, Lower Carruthers Hall, K7L 3N6. Phone us at 613-329-2693 or write down our request line number 613-533-2372 to phone us during the broadcast. Prisoners' Justice Day, August 10th, starting at 5 on CFRC 101.9.
Okay. That was Bohemian Captivity by Cacophony, that last one, which was a released in support of the J20 defendants. Today is a week of this week is a week of solidarity called with those defendants who were arrested at the inauguration protests in Washington, D.C. on January 20th, 2017. Pretty cool. Check it out, cacophony.bandcamp.com. Before that, we played Black and Yellow by Wiz Khalifa. That was a request. Shouting out to Graham J. at Pittsburgh Institution, who is apparently a Steelers fan. So hope you like that track and heard it. And yeah, we're going to take a quick break. We've got a special guest in the studio that we're going to chit-chat with a little bit. You can call us 613-533-2372. And again, in honor of the Week of Solidarity with the J20, we're going to play a track by Requiem called Storm Heaven that was released after the Miami summit, I believe it was, in 2001. So it's kind of a throwback, but relevant in the context of that. Check it out. Thank you. You are listening to CFRC 101.9 FM. This is CFRC Prison Radio. You just heard Storm Heaven by Requiem, and I'll Break Out Tonight from the Sing Me Home compilation, which was released this year in support of the June 11th International Day of Solidarity with Marius Mason and long-term anarchist prisoners. I have a special guest in the studio with me. Hello, Cedar.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm pretty good. How about you?
I'm doing good. Yeah, I'm doing great. And we always do a pretty free-flowing show on the last Wednesday of the month. This is Calls from Home. And when we're playing some music, you can give us a call at 613-533-CFRC. That's 2372. But yeah, Cedar, you recently were in France. You want to tell us a bit about that?
Sure, yeah. I spent the last year in France, which was sort of an interesting time to be there because I don't know if y'all remember, but last spring and summer, there was a very large movement throughout France against some reforms to the labor code. It was called Le Mouvement contre la loi travail. And during that movement, many, many people were arrested. And so a large component of what was happening at that time was also a movement against police and against prisons. And I guess I wanted to talk specifically today about some of the cases that are still ongoing and specifically about a couple of anarchists who are still in jail.
Okay, so if I understand correctly, there's a social movement that is ongoing in, like, is it across France or is it specific to Paris? Or,
I mean, I don't know if we can say it's ongoing anymore. I think, like what happens in a lot of places, when there's an election, like there was just recently the presidential
right.
elections in France, I think that really sucked a lot of the momentum out of the movement. But yeah, it was across France. It was very effective at putting a lot of pressure on the government. It included large kind of strikes and blockades of critical infrastructure, including oil refineries. It led to shutdowns of most of the country's gas stations, for instance.
Wow.
Blockades of all major transit systems. And in Paris, where there was a kind of a focus of street momentum, just of demonstrations and things like that, there were several just kind of massive demonstrations each week. And during these demonstrations, they became increasingly violent, especially in response to the police and also just out of people's kind of desire to attack these sorts of like infrastructure of repression, of which like the police are often the most visible.
Yeah.
On a particular day last spring, I guess after months of these demonstrations and kind of like increasing violence, as the demos kind of became more and more focused on the actions of the police, one day, it was the 18th of May, the police unions actually called their own demonstration against la haine anti-flic, the hatred of police. And so understandably, people organized to counter-demonstrate against this because it was a very escalated moment. And during that demonstration, a group of people set fire to a police car mm-hmm. that was parked very kind of in between these two demonstrations that were taking place. And there was a cop inside the car at the time. And nine people ended up being charged with attempted murder of this police officer for this kind of one incident. Some people being charged just with kind of being present and seeming to approve of the action. Some with like charged with breaking windows. Some with throwing a smoke bomb into the car, which ultimately is what set it on fire. So there were nine people who were initially accused, two of whom are still in jail, and one of whom has been in for over a year.
Wow. And is this typical? Were there serious charges being brought against these demos prior to this, or did this sort of mark a new level of repression in France?
I mean, I think these are some of the most serious charges to come out of that particular movement. But I mean, there is a long history of the state retaliating against kind of combative social movements using very serious charges, sometimes even not against movement, sometimes against just like autonomous activity and attacks against the financial system or against the police. There's been kind of a string of these sorts of cases. But this one, yeah, the kind of the scale of the legal threats that were brought against these nine individuals has been a bit unusual. And as well, some of the length of time, like specifically the one person who's been in jail the longest is an American anarchist. I mean, she's from the United States. Her name is Kara Wilde. And I know a lot of folks are thinking about her these days. But she's been in for, I think, 14 months waiting for trial.
Wow.
And her and another anarchist who's still in jail, Krem, who they both had their bail denied again last week on the 17th.
Okay, and where are they being held?
They're being held in Europe's largest prison in Fleury-Mérogis, so it's, you know, kind of a half hour south of Paris. And like a lot of prisons, I guess, in North America, I think this is sort of on that same new model where it's built outside of the city, often in these sort of hard-to-reach industrial areas. And it's built as sort of a series of panopticons, but this one's just enormous. It's got something like 8,000 people in it. And,
wow.
So it's built as this kind of three-leveled, enormous, five-pointed star that is in kind of a cluster with... That's the men's prison is the largest one, and then there's a women's prison and a youth prison that are also there. So they're both being held in there kind of in different units.
And do you know, is it sort of similar to super prisons in the United States where they have multiple security levels within the same complex and people are kind of transferred around within the institution?
It's there's a little bit of that. I think this prison maybe corresponds more to like detention centers in Canada. So
okay.
It's either people doing sentences of under a year or who are in pretrial. And where Kara is in there is as a trans person, that she is in a sort of an isolation unit that's been set aside for trans prisoners. Hmm. So that ends up being just very restrictive. Like in this prison in general, people spend 22 hours a day in their cell, and the cells are often overcrowded, like with three or four people stacked into a space that was built for one or two. And yeah, so Kara is just generally by herself in this cell or just in contact with the very few other trans prisoners and just only allowed outside into kind of a small yard. But
okay.
She's released a few public letters online, and there's a support website at freekarawild.org.
Kara with a K?
That's right. Thank you.
And you said that she's a trans person is held in a... Did you say it's a unit specifically for trans prisoners?
That's right. That's right. So it's a unit they built for trans... Or they didn't build it. It's an isolation unit that they've purposed for trans prisoners in the men's prison. I mean, like all prisons, the prisons in France are in the business of policing gender and of kind of making these calls about who is what gender, and that determines an aspect of how your treatment is. So although this unit for people who are women is in the men's prison, then there's also like a separate isolation unit for what... And nobody gets asked how they identify. But there's a separate unit for people who the guards just consider to be effeminate men. There's a separate... And then there's, like, general population and general isolation areas for people who need protection or things like that. But they're all kind of clustered together.
So that's the French state's response to social movements demanding change, or...
I guess that must
like,
be
where did that come
from? I think there's, like, a series of human rights cases that have kind of gone through the European Parliament. So... I mean, there's a lot of aspects of the French prison system that are always kind of being challenged in these, like, human rights courts.
Right. And, of course, here in Canada, and actually especially in Kingston, there's been a whole bunch of fanfare around the CSC changing its policy in terms of trans prisoners. There was a town hall here in Kingston where Justin Trudeau came and took a few, fielded a few questions, and one of them was, why do you continue to incarcerate people in the wrong prison? And he kind of answered, oh, I didn't know we did that. I guess we'll have to change that. And then apparently a week later, they announced that they're changing it all. So, I think that this could be illuminating in terms of where these reforms sometimes lead, is to sort of segregation, basically.
Well, totally. I think it's a way of just kind of avoiding these like larger questions of what is the role of prison in society, and I think it also tells us something about what gender is too, really, because like if gender is really just this method in this situation of determining what's the most effective way to like control and police your body as a way to like punish you for your position in the economy, then I mean I don't really think it's my business as an anarchist or radical or someone who like cares about other people to ask for prisons to like be more precise about how they control people's genders. I think it's my business to just try to destroy all prisons and continue to insist on the freedom for all prisoners. So like, even though I guess specifically I want to talk about like Karen Krem and like other people who are connected in relation to this burned police car, I think at the same time it's important to be like, I'm not asking for people to be considered political prisoners. I'm not asking for like better treatment of trans prisoners specifically. What I'm talking about is like finding ways to come together to completely destroy this thing that's called prison and bring about freedom for all prisoners.
I think that's great. And there was that was part of the statement that was put out after the demonstration in St. Louis last week around the heat wave and the air conditioners, where it sort of reflected a little bit in terms of some people were very much making it about getting some temporary air conditioners into this prison because people were, you know, falling ill from the heat. Mm-hmm. And others said that, you know, they were, that's not why they were there. They were there because they wanted to demand an end to prisons and build, start to build a social force that could actually bring that about. And that seems to be, you know, that's like the never-ending conversation in any kind of struggle that aims at conditions in prison, right?
Right. Hopefully it can be like a creative tension or a space where people can kind of hear each other, because I think prison impacts lots and lots of people, and of course we're not all going to have the same ideas about it. But yeah, I don't know, it was interesting hearing that particular discussion happening, because ultimately everybody was still working together and did share this common goal in that moment.
So are these individuals in France, are they receiving very much support?
I think it varies. They have a trial coming up at the end of September, so I think there was a fair bit of energy kind of going into preparing for that trial. I think maybe more so than we're used to seeing here, people take a lot of responsibility for organizing their legal defense, and so there's a lot of folks' friends and supporters are kind of going through documents and trying to put together the best possible defense, obviously in line with their principles where they're not collaborating with the state or giving information to anyone else. But yeah, I think Kara has, there's a lot of people missing her down in the U.S. And I know there's a lot of folks who miss Krem as well. And yeah, I think it will be a challenge to see kind of what comes out in these next few months. It's very uncertain. The case is very, it's been made very political. It's often talked about kind of in the media. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the reason why they've been held for so long, is because it is connected to this kind of large polarizing issue about the role of police in society, and specifically it's been kind of this symbol of like this hatred of police that exists.
Right, yeah. And especially for that to happen at a demonstration called by the police union.
Definitely.
In their own defense, like clearly they're feeling embattled and unpopular. In order to do that, so the symbolic weight of that seems to be a lot.
Totally, and especially because remember it was the election just wrapped up, and so, I mean, in France, I think there was something like 11 presidential candidates, you know, and so obviously all the ones who are kind of in the center or on the right are trying to position themselves as being more or less like the law and order candidates. Mm. So, it didn't get talked about a ton, but being able to make reference to these sort of like the need to push through these reforms in order to like, you know, change the role of police or give police additional powers and to like push back against this anti-police kind of current that's sort of cropped up a little bit everywhere in France, like the conflict. I don't know, police act a little bit differently there and are also like received pretty differently, and there's been a kind of a push to be a bit more antagonistic in lots of different movements or political currents. I feel like it was kind of in the background. And the case was recently, it's kind of convoluted how it's set up, but while you're in pretrial in France, while you're going through these kind of pretrial hearings, the judge who is overseeing your hearings is responsible for a lot of your treatment in prison. Mm-hmm. So requests for visitors go directly to the judge. All of your mail passes through the judge's office. But once that kind of preliminary inquiry is closed and you're waiting for trial, then those responsibilities pass to the prosecutor. So they both Karen and Krem have been in a situation for the last few months where the prosecutor, who's the person who has the most invested in having them be treated the most harshly, is then now denying all visits and was blocking their mail for something like 3 months. So I just got news like 3 days ago.
So that's the responsibility of the judiciary in France.
That's right.
Not the prison administrator.
That's right. It's only once you're sentenced that the responsibility passes to the prison.
Oh, wow. Mm-hmm. So that's quite a big difference from here.
Yeah. So it means that, again, like aspects of your treatment are much more political.
Yeah, and I could imagine writing a letter to somebody who's subject to that preliminary inquiry, it would be a very different thing, knowing that, you know, like it could have a lot of bearing on someone's case for knowing that the judge in the case is reading the letter that you're sending that person.
Definitely, you can create a lot of fear, because I feel like there is this desire to act in solidarity with these prisoners, but I think at the same time people see like, oh my gosh, they're facing serious charges, and even just these kind of routine gestures of support, like writing them letters, can people are worried that it will put them, kind of bunch them together with all of these other like protests and things like that that might have happened since, and in some way negatively impact them, which I think isn't really true, because both of them are people in this case who really kind of own their politics and are being very principled. So I don't think they'd be like bothered or scared by receiving support from others.
And you had mentioned that this this very large prison that they're currently being held in had some unrest happening within it.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I guess unrest is like a constant in pretty much all prisons.
Sure. Like
just this project of kind of keeping people in cages. But in one kind of notable moment, I think it happened in late May, was that in all of these prisons are very overcrowded, but in a youth one specifically, a group of youth, kind of, it seemed like they kind of made an ambush for the guards, but like two of them were kind of fighting in the yard, and when a couple guards went out to intervene, like 10 other people kind of like swarmed over and like beat up this group of like 7 or 8 guards. And which is interesting because I feel like it resulted in the conflict kind of spilling over into the street. So like the guards union starts like doing all these actions and it gets talked about, and people can kind of organize or circulate texts kind of like against prison guards and against the fact that they have unions and push things a little bit further. So yeah, I mean, it was kind of this moment. It's nice to find those moments where struggles inside of prisons can kind of spill over into the streets. I think a lot of folks were making the connection to, I think it was in 2008 when the immigration prison in Vincennes was burned down by inmates, and most of the people who were inside the prison, they didn't have enough spots to transfer people to, and so a lot of them were just let go.
Wow.
But yeah, and it involved like lots of other people were also fighting against prisons and against the immigration system at that time. Mm-hmm. And so there really was this like call and response that mm-hmm. allowed kind of that struggle to go very far on both sides of the walls.
Hmm. And are the police in France, are they organized into a single union, like across large areas, or are they sort of divided up by city to city?
That's a good question. I'm not sure. I think the policing bodies are split up like a little bit differently, and I think there is kind of a single body that represents like the national police, which then has like local detachments kind of all over the place.
Mm-hmm.
And in a lot of places, they're the ones, like in Paris, like they're the ones who you'll see during like demonstrations most and things like that. But then there's also kind of like your local police that are kind of somewhere in between, like somewhere a little bit more formal than a bylaw officer here or something. And then you also have something we don't really have an equivalent, is the gendarmes, which are a policing body that's organized through the military hierarchy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's interesting because this pattern of police protests, so that was maybe like the first one in this cycle. But in the fall, there was another in a poor neighborhood outside of Paris, two police officers were again kind of burned in a car, and this time one of them was seriously injured and spent several months in hospital. And this sparked this wave of night demonstrations by the police, where hundreds of police, with the sometimes dressed in uniform but with their badges removed, or sometimes just carrying kind of like some basic insignia and their weapons but all wearing masks, were kind of doing these motorcades through the streets at night, and doing these like armed marches on the parliament buildings and like things like that.
Wow.
And in those situations, those demonstrations were being policed by the gendarmes. So yeah, there's clearly this like form of organization that exists among the police, even outside of their union, that's like linked to various kind of far right political formations as well, that the state kind of struggles to kind of like control and just is always trying to appease.
Right. I met someone once from France. I think I was in Ottawa at the time, and I was asking him about how his time was in Canada and stuff. And he said, it stuck with me, he said that he felt really weirded out because he just got the vibe from everybody that if he did anything wrong, they would call the police. He said he doesn't, where he's from, he doesn't feel that at all. Or it's like a much more kind of like lots of people, just their common sense intuition wouldn't be to call the police because you saw some minor thing happening outside your window, but that he got a very strong sense while he was here in Ontario, at least, that if he did anything, that the police would be called immediately, is what he said.
Totally. And I feel like that's maybe an aspect of French culture, that there's a different attitude towards snitching. Mm. And some people have explained it to me as being related to the Nazi occupation, where it's very badly thought of to kind of be seen naming someone else to the authorities, because there is this history of people collaborating with an occupying army and kind of passing over people who are dissidents or who are outlaws or something like that, who are then like deported from the country and executed, you know?
Right.
So there is this history where, like, you know, tens if not hundreds of thousands of people were snitched on and deported and killed.
Mm-hmm.
So people are a little bit slower to do that. And there's also a difference too, is that the national police, they really don't do the kind of officer friendly thing that you see here. Like, if you're talking to a cop in France, it means you have a problem, and like they're not nice to you a lot of the time. Like, and you don't have this sort of like smiling cop downtown who's sort of taking questions and sort of just harassing poor people. Like, yeah, it's really just groups of four people, usually at least one armed with a machine gun, who just like don't speak to you or unless to like give you an order or something. So it's interesting.
Do they have Twitter?
Oh, I bet they do. But not kind of like individual cops like doing public relations.
Kingston police just got like 5 new Twitter accounts for the various wings of their PR sort of policing strategy. Yeah.
Charming. What kinds of things do they have to say?
There's a youth cop who's always taking pictures of smiling children. There's one who's just like a beat cop who goes out and, I don't know, like photographs his bicycle and coffee and says like cop life, hashtag something, whatever. Mm-hmm. And then there's the mounted unit, I think, as well. You know, known best recently for trampling demonstrators at the Anti-Canada Day parade. And although that wasn't on their Twitter. And there's a community outreach one who doesn't seem to tweet very much.
Okay.
But this was all founded by a particular police officer who kind of, I think, went to a lot of conferences internationally in terms of police relations. And I think a lot of this stuff actually comes out of counterinsurgency sort of stuff developed by the U.S. military. For sort of occupation type stuff, but it's totally applicable in a domestic policing scenario as well. Mm. Whatever, like getting people's consent for their control. But yeah, they seem to be aggressively expanding their friendly cop sort of outward face on the internet at the moment.
That's interesting. And I feel like I saw that debate playing out in the presidential election in France too, where people would talk about like, oh, we need to move back towards proximity policing, you know, instead of having this more kind of openly counterinsurgency thing where like the police come in and are just like very kind of violent and heavy-handed, and they're asking to move back towards what we might call like community policing.
Mm-hmm.
Which was kind of gotten rid of by a previous right-wing government, and they're like, end of community policing, like we're just going like open hostility against all the drug dealers and delinquents.
Okay.
So it is a specific political idea, like it wasn't just the police who wanted it. Would you say that that sort of tension between like the kind of friendly community policing cop and the more like hostile, aggressive police presence, would you say that that's linked to some of the debates that also happen around prison, around the sort of like idea of abolition of prison as more ankle bracelets, more parole, things like that, versus like the kind of longer, harsher sentences people?
I think so. Yeah. I mean, I think that it is the liberal answer to critiques of, you know, violence and brutality from the state. And, I mean, I think, you know, when you start talking about the continuum of control and ankle bracelets and community policing, like, social media, I think, is a huge factor in terms of sort of horizontal surveillance, but also top-down surveillance and shaming that happens. So the police will often tweet things that are shaming on people because they know that shame is, like, more than just charges. Like, shaming people is one of the biggest tools that they have at their disposal, and the newspaper will basically print whatever they release, so they'll often make fun of people for, you know, getting drunk and falling asleep in their car or something like that, and they know that that could be more effective in sort of their strategy of control than just putting that person through the courts.
Right.
There's a Toronto bike cop who's become famous. I think they're pioneering a lot of this stuff on the Canadian level in Toronto right now. And he just goes around taking pictures of people parked in bike lanes with their license plates and says, shame on you for blocking the bike lane.
Oh,
apparently it's been really effective because, I don't know, people get really up in arms and try to identify the people who are doing it. And it's a disturbing trend, for sure.
Yeah, that relies on everybody listening to what the police are saying.
Yep. Yes, it does. Any last thoughts? We have a few minutes left. We should probably play a song on our way out.
No, thanks so much for bringing me on and talking about this. Again, the website, if you want to write Kara a letter or just learn more about her case, it's freekara, K-A-R-A, wild.org.
Wild spelt.
W-I-L-D.
Great. Thanks so much for coming on. It's been a pleasant surprise doing this. Why don't we play that Mother Tarika track? Do you want to give any context to it?
Mother Tarika is a Hamilton-based hip-hop artist, and this is a solo album he put out, I guess, 2 years ago.
Okay, and maybe actually I'll sign out before playing this song. So you've been listening to CFRC Prison Radio on CFRC 101.9 FM. We will be back next week, next Wednesday from 7 to 8 o'clock with more prison and prisoner-related content. Please don't forget that we have a special broadcast coming up for Prisoners Justice Day this August 10th from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. We're going to play segments related to prison issues, as well as a memorial piece. And then from 8 until 10, we're going to play music and your song requests. If you want to get in touch with us, you can call our own show phone number at 613-329-2693. Send us an email, cfrcprisonradio@riseup.net, or use snail mail. We are at CFRC Prison Radio, care of CFRC, Lower Carruthers Hall, Queen's University, Kingston, Ontario, K as in Kilo, 7, L as in Lima, 3, N as in November, 6. This is a track off of Mother Tarika's Imagine Something Different. Cedar, thanks so much for coming on the show.
No problem.
The year is 2015.
The 80 richest people in the world are wealthier than the bottom half of the world's population. You got it. And this bears repeating. The 80 wealthiest people, a group that could fit on a bus, control more wealth than 3.5 billion people. Imagine something different.
Welcome to this indigenous isle. Nah, this ain't Canada, 'cause every mile has been colonized. The land's been defiled. But hey, don't sweat it, child. Resistance powerful, 'cause we be getting riled up by First Nation warriors protecting the wild from pillaging fat cats sitting on money piles, doing dirty deeds of the first percentile. Here, the body you in determines the style of social conditions you receive, how dialed up prejudice is. Details about your life compiled, put away into your government file. Your race and gender still define your worth, the type of access you receive on this earth. State sanctioned murders are part of this curse, but none of us are free like Solomon Burke. Imagine something different. If only for an instant. Imagine something different. For a moment, whose world is this, and what's your place on it? What's a small victory against faceless opponents? Faceless and blame-free, like a dronist. What's fair when our fight's for atonement? And we got mad strength inside us like Patronus. Can't afford to lose with stakes this high, and nothing can stop us with the truth on our side. Still, money got us confused, mind fruits been bruised. Misinformed about happiness, like men in suits. The school teacher taught us, get rich, get freedom. If you poor, fuck you then. That's how we living in these open-air prisons. That's why prisons make some men millions. To the pigs, listen, if you got a gun in our face pointed, when we point ones back, don't act so disappointed.
Imagine
something different.
Imagine something different. Imagine.
If only for an instant. Yo, we told the savor the moment, we've come so far. But this far is only enough when low be the bar. Focus your attention on this like a lead guitar. Racial tension still exists, 'cause racists are heads of state. Trusted with gates and demonstrate the blatant type of hate that POCs face every day. Still they resist, fighting for basic human rights. Just 'cause it's legal, don't mean that it's right. Tactics diverse, 'cause the struggle we aim to win. Malcolm X and MLK, we're both considered militant. I, for one, don't give a damn about your skin. What bitch you packing, just what fight you in. Which side of the wealth divide do